Hello and welcome. This is Sharon. I'm bringing you the pantograph for today, Wednesday, December 10th, 2025. We'll begin our reading on the front page with this week's Eats of the Week column, Cheers Vibe at Coffee Corner. Clinton Shop serves wide range of flavors with homey atmosphere. Do you want to get a flavorful coffee, tea, and maybe a roll or panini where it feels like someone knows your name? Perhaps you should try the Coffee Corner in Clinton. Customers love our ambiance and cozy feel. We have often heard that our customer service is similar to the show Cheers, said Kyle Hubrick, co-owner of the business, with the longtime slogan, Home is where the coffee is. Hubrick and her sister, Bryn Girdler, both Clinton natives, have owned and operated the Coffee Corner since 2016. Beyond a wide-ranging and often-changing menu of coffees, teas, other beverages, baked goods, sandwiches, soups, and salads, they support local women-owned businesses and vendors by featuring their handmade items for sale in the lobby of the coffee shop. Bryn and I love the partnership that we have built together over the years, and we take pride in being the faces of our business and developing a close family-like bond with our staff, Hubrick said. We were recently told that we are a staple in Clinton, and that's a huge honor, in my opinion. The coffee shop at 59 Cedar Square sits at the corner of U.S. Route 51 and Illinois Route 54, the two main highways that run through the city, hence the Coffee Corner name. We were so sad to no longer have one here, a coffee shop, so we decided with our backgrounds and previous experience to make our own, Hubrick explained. Coffee Corner features a different flavored coffee each day and a different cold brew flavor each week. This week, the cold brew flavor is Mary Mocha Mint. They offer over 35 flavors of syrup and over 18 flavors of sugar-free syrups. Featured drinks this week are Frosty's Spiced Cookie on Wednesday, Go Bananas on Thursday, White Chocolate Mousse on Friday, and Winter Wonderland on Saturday. They offer seasonal menus as well. The fall and winter menus are very popular, Hubrick said. This time of year, their Snickerdoodle White Mocha is popular, along with a s'mores latte from the fall menu. Their most popular flavored coffee is banana bread. They also offer teas, refreshers, and smoothies, and other non-coffee items. Featured teas this week include Mango Peach on Wednesday, Pina Colada on Thursday, Raspberry Peach on Friday, and Tropical Black on Saturday. Other winter menu drinks include Peppermint Mocha, Salted Caramel Mocha, Gingerbread Maple White on White, Praline Latte, Grandma's Cookie Latte, Peppermint Patty Macchiato, Cookie Jar Hot Chocolate, Holiday Spiced Cider, Gingerbread Chai, Winterberry Lotus, Moonlit Orchard Lotus, White Mint Oreo Frappe, Candy Cane Cold Brew Extreme, and Frosty's Shaken Espresso. Other menu items such as baked goods are available, including fairy bread, avocado toast, bagels, toast, and cinnamon rolls for breakfast, and paninis, cold sandwiches, salads, sides, and other seasonal items such as weekly soups for lunch. This week's soup is white cheddar poblano. Their panini press is turned off at 1:30 p.m. on weekdays and at 12:30 p.m. on Saturday. A special Harry Potter menu, including a special drink for each Hogwarts house is available too. The Slytherin and Hufflepuff drinks can come either hot or iced, along with pumpkin pasty cider, while the Gryffindor drink is a blended frozen beverage and the Ravenclaw only comes iced. They offer various coffee and tea options for catering local events, as well as customizable bakery options upon request. Customers can also purchase bags of their coffee and tea in store in addition to their featured vendors. The shop is open 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Wednesday until 4 on Thursday and Friday, from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturdays, and they're closed Sunday. A happy hour is offered the last hour of each day with discounted drinks, including half-off iced coffee, drip coffee, and refreshers. Customers can enjoy their treats inside, as they can accommodate around 30 guests, or they can also order their goodies online. Hubrick said their future goal for Coffee Corner is to expand the business into a larger building to accommodate more seating, especially for their early morning customers who enjoy staying for the bottomless coffee that is offered every morning. If you go, again, this is Coffee Corner at 59 Cedar Square in Clinton. Hours are 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Wednesday, 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thursday and Friday, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. They're closed Sunday. You can reach them by email at cornercoffeellc@yahoo.com or call them 217-570-0773. Their website is coffeecornerIL.square.site, and you can find them at Facebook, facebook.com/coffeecornerllc. The Pantograph, as you probably know, each week profiles a different bar or restaurant, from those that are new to old favorites. If you have a suggestion for the next one they should feature, email ojacobs@pantograph.com. And if you'd like to read the previous Eats of the Week columns, you can find those at pantograph.com. Bloomington bulk waste pickup changes. Biweekly curbside collection returning. The City of Bloomington will offer bulk waste collections every 2 weeks with a sliding fee scale and temporarily close off the city's Citizen Convenience Center waste drop-off site in an effort to prevent abuse of the services. The City Council voted 8-1 on Monday in favor of the changes, with Alderwoman Sheila Montney voting no. Instead of continuing curbside bulk waste pickup at $25 per 2.5 cubic yard end loader bucket, Public Works crews will now perform biweekly pickups that would be free for the first bucket of waste. Additional buckets would start at $30 for the second, $60 for the third, and $90 for the fourth. A $100 per bucket charge for homeowners who hire a contractor will remain in place. This new service will take effect in January and will be offered year-round except during leaf pickup in late fall. The city also will close the Citizen Convenience Center, a site south of Bloomington Public Library where residents can drop off bulk waste between January and March, and will limit disposable materials to yard waste and electronics. free curbside bulk waste pickup had been offered by the city until the opening of the CCC in 2018, which was viewed as a more efficient means for residents to offload items such as furniture and remodeling debris. Shifting from free bulk waste pickup to a for-fee pickup system and a free CCC had critics, however. Alderman Cody Hendricks said he sees bulk waste pickup as an equity issue because not everyone has the means to get a vehicle and take their bulk waste materials to the center. Those who can't, such as those with disabilities or senior citizens, then have to pay to have the city pick up their materials curbside. Probably one of the number one issues I hear outside of parking is the downtown alderman is, why don't we get bulk waste every single week? Hendricks said. According to the city staff, the center is often exploited by landlords and contractors who bring in multiple loads of bulk waste on a weekly basis free of charge. The current scheduling process for booking curbside pickup is also seen as inefficient because it requires public works crews to determine where the materials have been placed and then send a separate loader and truck to get it. Bloomington Deputy City Manager Sue McLaughlin said bulk waste disposal continues to operate at a deficit, but the overall use has fluctuated over the last 5 years. This was never intended to make money. It's never going to make money, but it is a service that we provide and we're trying to be efficient, McLaughlin said. In October, city staff presented the now-approved series of changes to bulk waste operations that are designed to reduce contractor and landlord abuse. McLaughlin said the hope is that the public works employees at the center will be able to be reassigned to street sweeping work, which has fallen behind over the years. Alderwoman Molly Ward proposed an amendment to the ordinance directing the staff to devise a way to monitor and evaluate the effectiveness of the new program. The intent is to make sure that if the program is not meeting the council's expectations, it won't take another 7 years to make changes. The ordinance was approved with that amendment. Montney said the idea of establishing this center was to address the abuse of the curbside bulk waste program by contractors and landlords. However, the city is proposing to go back to this model for the exact same reason. Although she's not against the change, Montney said she's concerned about initiatives coming before the council that don't offer a rigorous financial analysis and potential consequences. Normal. Town okays $15.7 million tax levy, up 5%. The Normal Town Council approved a $15.7 million property tax levy, which is almost a 5% increase over last year's levy. During a special meeting on Monday night, the council moved forward with the 2025 property tax levy for taxes payable in 2026. The levy includes about $11.34 million for the town government and $4.37 million for the Normal Public Library. Councilmember Scott Preston was the only member to vote against the levy. The total $15.7 million represents a 4.78% increase over the $14.99 million 2024 levy for taxes payable in 2025. The increases break down to about 3% for the town's share and 9% for the library, but an 8.5% growth in Normal's tax base is expected to reduce the overall tax rate despite the tax levy. The preparation of the $15.7 million property tax levy was approved by Council on November 17th after Council Member Kevin McCarthy proposed amending it to assign $500,000 from the levy intended for the general fund to help pay the town's Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund obligation. Of the town's share of the levy, all but $500,000 of the levy was earmarked for employee retirement, police and fire pensions, IMRF, Social Security, and Medicare. Some members questioned why $500,000 was going to the general fund for unspecified spending, arguing the levy should be reduced that much or earmarked for pensions. In the library's levy increase, town officials said they were looking to rebuild the library's reserves after they were spent down to pay for renovations this year without taking on debt. Officials said the library still needs to finish other capital projects like heating, ventilation, and air conditioning upgrades over the next 5 to 10 years. Even with the combined levy going up, the growth in the town's equalized assessed valuation, the total taxable value of property in the town, results in the tax rate likely decreasing from $1.087 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation for the 2024 levy to $1.047 per $100 EAV for the 2025 levy. For a house that remains valued at $210,000, the town and library share of the property tax bill likely will drop from $761 to $733, but rising home values will increase tax bills. For example, taxes on a $280,000 home will increase by $48. The council also approved an abatement of $5 million in property taxes for bonds issued between 2009 and 2021. In other news, Chad Pacey, president of the Normal Firefighters Local 2442 Union, asked the council during the public comment to schedule a dedicated work session focused on the union's recent study regarding the relocation of fire station number 2. When residents pay taxes, they do so with a simple expectation that their families, their homes, and their neighborhoods will be protected. Public safety is not a luxury. It is the foundation on which a strong community is built, and today that foundation is showing signs of strain, Pacey said. That fire station, which served as the department's headquarters until the new one on Main Street opened in 2017, is slated to close sometime after a new fire station number 2 opens farther east at the corner of Shepherd and Hershey's Road. The relocation, which was approved 2 years ago, will move the station from its central location at the corner of College Avenue and Blair Drive to 2406 Shepherd Road. Construction began for the new station in early October. The union has since conducted its own study that contradicts the town's claims that the relocation plans will optimize response times and calls for keeping the College Avenue station and increasing personnel for public safety. We, the firefighters who serve this town every day, would not be standing here if this were not our last avenue in the chain of command, Pacey said. Just as you scheduled this meeting to discuss taxes and the future of Normal, We are just asking you to schedule a dedicated brief work session specifically focused on the concerns we have brought forward. Today's Flick Fact Question. Veterans Parkway is such a predominant travel hub in Bloomington Normal. Of all the traffic accidents that occur in the Twin Cities in a year, what percentage take place on Veterans Parkway? And your answer is 16% of all traffic accidents in Bloomington Normal occur along Veterans Parkway. That's according to a recent Reinvent Veterans Parkway traffic study. That's nearly one of every five accidents over the entire 46 square miles of the Twin Cities. And from the back pages of the Pantograph, how time flies locally. 100 years ago, December 10th, 1925, Bloomington, during the coming year, may secure a federal court district provided a new government building is authorized. A movement is being quietly engineered to this effect and with excellent prospects for success. It is learned that the department is favorable to the establishment of federal courts at central points rather than a distance. 75 years ago, on December 10, 1950, the city of Bloomington will ask the Illinois Power Company how much it wants for its Bloomington Light Plant and distributing system, the city council decided. Mayor Cecil R. Cohn will ask them to set a price on their facilities. The council's special light committee said there is a need for additional income to maintain the many municipal tax-supported services that these needs are urgent. 50 years ago, December 10, 1975, Jeffrey Dale Miller of Bloomington and Gary Kent Redness of El Paso are among 30 candidates nominated by U.S. Senator Adlai Stevenson III, Democrat from Illinois, for appointment to the nation's Armed Services Academies. Miller and Redness are candidates for the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis, Maryland. And 25 years ago today, on December 10, 2000, at the Bloomington Public Library, staff have conspired to keep a secret for several years. They say their facility has a serious lack of space and doesn't have the materials it should have either. One tactic to hide this has been to remove public seating when adding material. The library lost 25 seats this year during a rearrangement. Fire destroys FS warehouse. An evergreen FS seed warehouse was destroyed in a structure fire Monday afternoon, according to a statement from the company. Evergreen FS is grateful to the Wapella Fire Department and the surrounding fire departments that responded promptly and professionally to the scene, the statement said. Wapella Deputy Fire Chief Nelson Thorpe said the fire was paged out at 11:12 a.m. and was under control by 12:30 p.m. Crews from Clinton, Kenny, Waynesville, and Hayworth assisted with the fire. The Moroa and Warrensburg Fire Departments served as backup. The cause of the fire is unknown at this time, he added. Thorpe noted the wind helped to keep the black smoke away from Wapella. Evergreen FS is a retail agricultural cooperative headquartered in Bloomington with locations throughout Woodford, Livingston, McLean, DeWitt, and Macon counties. According to the statement from Evergreen, all employees are safe and no injuries were reported at the scene. Man who injured child gets prison. A Bloomington man has been sentenced to 11 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to battering and seriously injuring a child. Giovanni Rodriguez, 28, appeared Wednesday, December 3rd, before Judge William Yoder for a status hearing, during which he pleaded guilty to two counts of aggravated domestic battery. He submitted the guilty plea 5 days before he was scheduled to begin a jury trial. Yoder sentenced Rodriguez to 11 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. He must serve 85% of the sentence and then 4 years of mandatory supervised release. The judge also ruled he must register as a violent offender against youth upon release. Rodriguez earned credit for 473 days already served in jail. Initially, Rodriguez was charged with 3 counts of aggravated battery to a minor causing injury, all Class X felonies, and 3 counts of aggravated domestic battery, Class 2 felonies, for offenses that occurred between October 1st and October 12th, 2023. Following his guilty plea to 2 Class 2 counts, the remaining Class 2 charge, and 3 Class X felonies were dismissed by Assistant State's Attorney Daniel Guido, pursuant to the plea agreement. The probable cause statement indicated Normal police responded to Carl Broman Medical Center on October 13, 2023, for a report of a small child who was possibly battered and had been brought in for treatment. Police observed the child had a broken forearm and abrasions and bruising to his face and body, with bruising in various stages of healing. Prosecutors previously stated officers learned Rodriguez was the only adult present before the child was taken to the hospital. Rodriguez had told officers the child must have injured himself while he was out of the room, but several medical professionals told investigators they did not believe the child's injuries to be consistent with Rodriguez's recollection of events, noting the forearm injury was at least 2 weeks old. The child later told a youth advocacy worker that Rodriguez had hit him. Rodriguez was represented by attorney Edward Kubaga, who could not be reached for comment. Probation ordered in burglary case. A Chicago man has been sentenced to probation for burglary in McLean County. Asher T. Banks, 32, appeared before Judge Jason Chambers for a pretrial hearing on Friday, December 5th, during which he submitted a guilty plea. Banks was initially charged with residential burglary, unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon, possession of a firearm without a valid FOID card, and a Class 3 felony. The Class 1 was amended from residential burglary to just burglary. The defendant pleaded guilty to this count, and the other 2 charges were dismissed by the prosecution, represented by Assistant State's Attorney Spencer Chikasha. The judge ordered him to serve 30 months of probation and 10 days in jail, with credit for 5 days, meaning his jail time was served. Banks was represented by attorney John Busson, who could not be reached for comment. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for Wednesday, December 10th, 2025. Please stay tuned.